Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. We're broadcasting this week from the Never Assume department here at Car Talk Plaza. You know, every fan of The Odd Couple knows what happens when you assume, right?
Yes, I do know that. Well, this is a story about a car just like my very own, and it was sent to us by Bob Manning. He says, during my college days in the mid-60s, I was a passenger in my frat brother's beater car, a 1952 MGTD. We were on a straight highway doing 55 miles an hour, and he suddenly pulled the steering wheel off its post and handed it to me, saying, here, hold this. I freaked and tried to give it back to him. We traveled at highway speed for at least 5 minutes before he agreed to put the wheel back where it lived, and did so whilst laughing loudly. He later told me that the car pulled slightly to the right, and if he touched the brakes, it pulled to the left. So he could, in essence, steer on a straight road for a while with the gas and the brake. Much laughter ensued. About a month later, I borrowed the car for a hot date with a Miss Teenage America runner-up. We ended up on the same road, and I thought that a little humor was just what was needed to break the ice. So I pulled off the steering wheel and handed it to her, saying, here, hold this for a bit. She went nuts. While I was trying to explain to her that everything was okay, the car began to drift to the right. So I tapped the brakes. It went further to the right. Now I panicked. I tried to grab the wheel from the hysterical girl. In a very short while, we were off the road and mowing down a half an acre of corn before coming to a stop. She replaced the wheel and asked me to take her home. Further words were never spoken. Upon returning the car to its owner, I told a story which created throngs of laughter and an explanation that he had had the brakes fixed.
Hence,
never assume.
Well, look, if you've got a question about your MGTD, your brakes, or your upcoming date with a Miss Teenage America runner-up, give us a call. The number is 888.
Mow down corn.
Half an acre.
Half an acre of corn.
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, this is Kathy from Old Lyme, Connecticut.
Hi, Kathy from
Kathy
Old Lyme.
Kathy with a C.
With a what?
C.
No.
Old Lyme?
Lyme with,
with a K?
With a Y.
It's yes, Lyme with a Y, Kathy with a K.
No kidding.
Yes.
So what's up, Kathy?
Well, I have a 96 Dodge Stratus, and I got it last spring.
Mm-hmm.
And this fall, after I had driven it, maybe 25, 30 miles, the exhaust started smelling like burnt popcorn.
That's a new one, burnt popcorn.
Well, it took us a while to try to figure out what it smelled like. And
yeah.
I've got two adolescent sons, and we hemmed and hawed and finally figured out, yeah, the closest we could come up with was burnt popcorn.
Yeah.
And it's definitely coming from the exhaust.
Out the tailpipe.
The tailpipe, right.
Burnt popcorn, huh?
Well,
wow.
I'm wondering if it might be. I don't drive very far on a very regular basis. I work within a mile or two of where I live, so I do a lot of short little trips.
Well, I'm going to tell you what I
That's
believe.
That's got nothing to do with it.
No, because I was wondering if I was developing a primordial soup in my muffler.
You may be, but I think the smell is not really coming from your muffler.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, or coming out the tailpipe, but
it is
coming from the engine compartment.
You think so?
And I think the most likely thing to make a smell like this is a very small oil leak, and somehow or another the oil is dripping onto your exhaust system, and when it's vaporized, it makes this smell.
Yeah, and it's very unlikely that something coming out the tailpipe would smell of burnt popcorn. Now, you have a couple of teenagers.
Actually, one teenager and a 12-year-old.
Close enough. You get them to go walking around the car, sticking their nose up that tailpipe, and see.
I asphyxiate them good here. Huh?
No, they'll be all right.
And After you revive them.
And I'll bet you they'll find that the smell is not, in fact, coming from the tailpipe, but is coming from under the hood.
You could alternatively, instead of exposing your children to carcinogens.
I could do it to my husband, right?
Sure, let your husband do it.
You could take it to the dealer and ask them to put it on the lift and look for an oil leak, and I bet you they're going to find something like your oil pressure switch is leaking or the valve cover gasket is leaking.
Okay.
See you, Kathy.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Dave. I'm up in Hanover, Massachusetts.
Dave, Hanover.
Where's that?
About 20 minutes south of Boston.
Oh, that's like down the Cape, sort of.
Yeah, only about halfway.
I've never been. Is it exciting?
No, it's kind of a quiet little sleepy town.
Yeah.
Little suburb.
So what's on your mind, Dave?
Well, I have an 89 Volkswagen Golf that I've had for about 3 years now. It's got about 130,000 miles on it.
Mm.
Every once in a while, it starts to click as you're driving it. And then when you're driving along, it all of a sudden the whole front end will start to shake, like the car is about to like shake apart.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but it doesn't do it all the time, and I have no idea what makes it do it and what doesn't make it do it. And I brought it to a mechanic, and they had no idea what it was.
Is the clicking in step with the rotation of the wheels?
It sounds like it.
And it would stop if you stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as you took off again, you'd begin to get clicks, more or less in step with the speed of the wheels.
Yes.
Wow.
And it's accompanied by a vibration.
Yes.
This sounds dangerous, Dave.
Yeah, I was going to say I have to preface everything my brother is going to tell you by saying that whenever you have vibrations in the front end, it's probably something dangerous, or at least you should assume that it's something dangerous.
It feels dangerous.
So you've had people look at this.
I have had people look at it. And they replaced something, and it stopped for about a week and a half, and then it started again.
Ooh, ooh.
Had it ever gone a week and a half without doing it before?
Oh, yeah, it goes for like 2 weeks without doing it. And then
so they may not have done diddly when they replaced whatever they replaced.
Yeah?
Well, I think I know what it is.
Do you really?
I think.
Okay.
I think what you have, Dave, is a bad constant velocity joint, which would account for the clicking and also account for the shaking, because what's happening is one of the balls in there must be broken. The constant velocity joint has, in this car, I think, 6 ball bearings that are embedded in a cage that fit into, and there's a male part of the joint and a female. And
see, what you're missing, Dave, is my brother's hands.
What?
See, as he's talking to you, he's making little shapes, and he's pushing things together.
Well, I have to do that to explain it to myself. The first step is making sure I know how it works. In any event, one of these little ball bearings, which are about a half an inch in diameter, has probably broken and probably occasionally jams itself so that it inhibits the free movement of the outer part of the Zeppa joint.
Okay.
And when that happens, it actually, as it turns, whenever it comes to this bad ball and it can't flex, it momentarily slows that wheel down.
All right.
And then as soon as it passes, it speeds it up. And it would be the equivalent of you're driving the car and having somebody apply the brake for just a split second
to the right-hand wheel.
To the right or the left front wheel.
Okay.
And when that happens, the car is going to shake violently.
All right.
Then the ball either gets chewed up some more or gets moved around, and the noise goes away, and so does the shaking.
See, now this is the time, Dave, when you're supposed to say, well, they just replaced all the CV joints in the car.
Well, I had a hint that they hadn't.
No, they hadn't, because it would have cost more money, and he wouldn't have forgot.
What did they replace?
I think they replaced the rotors, actually.
Yeah, well, that would have been a good start, but... Mm.
But you guys think it's one of these...
Well, we start with stuff like that, too, because we want to make sure we have the customer coming back until we finally get it.
I think I have to say that I think my brother's analysis of this situation is quite brilliant.
Okay. It explains everything.
It explains everything. It's absolutely perfect.
Oh, yeah, interesting.
And as you know, I don't let him get away with much.
Oh, I know. He's a pain in the butt.
But ask him to replace
one of the axles. Put a rebuilt one or a used one in there.
Okay.
And then drive the car. They may even, when they take the axles out, be able to figure out if they strip off the boots, which joint is bad.
I think they will.
All right. And how much will that cost, do you guys think?
Hundreds.
Hundreds?
Golf? $212.85. That includes the tax and tip.
And licensing fees. See you, Dave.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Good luck.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Carla, and I'm calling from Homer, Alaska.
What's happening?
I have a 1978 Toyota pickup truck.
Uh-huh.
Well, I bought it in October, and I've had several things happen to it. But last time I drove it, I could drive it with a full tank of gas only. If it got down below, anywhere below a full tank of gas, I couldn't drive uphill with it. I'd have to turn around and drive up backwards.
So you would actually back up the hills?
Uh-huh. I mean, it would go uphill frontward all the time, or the normal direction, until I started putting weight in the back of the truck, and I put a grader blade in for traction.
Do all the wackos move to Alaska?
No.
I mean, were you born in Alaska, or did you?
Oh, no.
I was exiled here.
Is this some kind of punishment? Were you bad and parochial school? Did the nuns send you there?
Alaska, 1 year.
Oh, it's whoa.
Oh, gosh, no, it's been 18.
18.
Yeah.
No, I hate to pry, but what the hell are you doing there?
Oh, I think my parents are still wondering that same question.
They're there, too?
No.
No, they're not there.
They're in California, right?
No, they're in Washington.
Washington. Oh. Uh-huh. So what, again, like I say, I hate to pry, but why did you move there? And what? Give us a day in the life of Carla from Homer.
Oh, no.
Come on.
Well, you went there seeking adventure, huh?
I did.
You could have told us you were from San Diego, and we wouldn't have asked you any of these questions, but you divulged you were from Homer, and now you're going to have to spill your guts.
Oh, it was an accident. I was on my way. I was actually moving out of my hometown to, which is eastern Washington, to the west coast of Washington State.
Yeah.
And I detoured.
You got lost.
With a friend, and it didn't look that far on the map, so we drove here.
Male or female friend?
Male.
Male friend, yeah.
Yeah, he ditched you, right? He's gone.
No, she ditched him.
Gone.
Yeah, he's long gone. Right, he's one winter was enough to get him out of there. What are you, crazy?
But you liked it.
I liked it. I used to like it a lot better. I like it. I would like it better if I was gone out of here for a month or so.
Are you ready to come home now, Carla?
Yes. Yeah. I want
to
go.
Would you
home.
Like us to help you fix your truck so you can drive home?
Will you promise that you'll drive home if we tell you how to fix the truck?
And stay home?
My mother would be so happy to hear this.
I mean, how long will it take to get to see Mom? Like 20 hours?
Oh, if I drive straight, let's see. If I drive straight
figure
through,
on three breakdowns.
No. I mean, if you drive straight through, you can meet.
If I can drive in forward straight through, I could get there in 3 days. But if I have to drive in reverse, it'll take me at least a week.
You can meet Sergeant Preston in Dawson.
3 days?
3 days. That's, I think, how much time it took last time. But, you know,
wow.
We stopped and
all right.
Ate and slept a little bit.
All right, let's get to work then.
Let's okay.
What was the problem?
Won't climb a hill in forward gear.
Won't climb a hill in forward gear.
Unless the gas tank is full. And the reason it won't climb the hill is that your fuel pump is probably not working anymore. Now, you can tell us you put a new fuel pump in, but I know you didn't.
No, are you kidding? No.
Your fuel pump is not sucking the gas out of the tank, and by driving the thing up the hill backwards, you're relying on gravity to convey the fuel from the tank to the carburetor.
Well, that makes sense.
But when you go the other way, you've got to actually pull the gas uphill along with the truck.
Yeah. It didn't work.
Right, because the tank is where? Behind you.
Behind me.
and the fuel pump can't do it. I mean, you could have a busted fuel line, too. You could have a rupture or even a pinhole in the line between the pump and the tank, and that would accomplish the same thing. It would give you inadequate fuel supply.
Do you have a halfway decent mechanic?
I am a halfway decent mechanic.
You are? Okay.
You are she.
You're it. All right. So you're going to just go out, and you're going to buy yourself a fuel pump, and you're going to put it in yourself?
Yes.
All right. So you never gave us a day in the life of Carla from home. I mean, do you have a job?
Yeah, I do, but not a real job, not this time of year. I work in the summertime. I work for the Department of Fish and Game.
That's only 2 days. What do you do the rest of the day?
Work on my truck. No.
Well, Carla, I've got to tell you.
What?
You have got to move back to civilization. You are depriving humanity of what sounds like a very wonderful person.
Yeah.
So it's been a pleasure talking to you, and you should move back to civilization where everyone else can enjoy your company, too.
Yeah.
Hey, well, thank you.
Because I wouldn't mind having coffee with you, kid.
Oh, well, you don't have any other brothers, do you?
Yeah, I got one.
Me too.
I got one brother, and his wife would be more than happy to get rid of him. Well, we can have coffee. We don't have to have
it doesn't have to be amorous.
Come on. We can just have coffee.
Yeah, you've been up there too long. Lighten up, will you?
Carla. Try to find a warm place and do this job
soon.
And give me a call when you get to Washington.
Okay.
We'll meet you for coffee.
Good luck.
Okay. See you, Carla. And call your mother.
Oh, I will.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
My God.
Well, I mean, you have to. I had to ask. I mean, I knew it wasn't polite.
I mean, you have to ask. What the hell is she doing up there?
I mean, come on. I mean, no. The spirit of adventure does overtake you. I mean, I've got to admit that if I were in a truck and I were
sure.
in the state of Washington.
And you were 16 years old
I'd
and someone
tempted.
Said it's only 3 days to Alaska, hang a right,
what
you'd do it.
What an adventure.
Sure.
For a week.
But to forget to come back? I mean, come on.
Okay, Tommy, do you remember last week's puzzler?
Do you have to ask?
All right, I'll give you the hints. Fill in the blank. Last time you applied for a job, you tried to convince your prospective employer that your IQ was above blank.
Yeah, whale dung.
No, well, you might have gotten away with that, actually. You told them your IQ was above average, and the puzzler was about an average salary, and we'll be back with the answer, along with more of your calls, in a minute.
So please stay tuned. He's got an old brown Cadillac to mount. And even though Goldilocks wonders who's been messing with her radio's presets whenever she hears us say it, this is NPR. Hey, if you'd like to hear more Car Talk.
Yeah, like if your cable box broke and you can't watch anything other than C-SPAN.
You can download hundreds of classic Car Talk shows.
And by classic, we mean
old. Previously aired.
Exactly.
<you know.
laughs> Just go to cartalk.com and click where it says listen to the show. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the answer to last week's puzzler.
This was a good one.
Well, it was all right.
It was good.
Anyway, this was inspired by an email I stole from Charlie Strauss. The seven employees of the Coney Island Crab Cake Company are sitting around the lunchroom having what? Crab cakes for lunch. And they decide that they'd like to know the average salary of the employees at the Coney Island Crab Cake Company. Now, obviously, they could each write down their salary and they could add it up and divide by seven, but they don't want to do that because nobody wants to divulge his salary, nor does anyone want to know the salaries of the other guys.
It could only lead to trouble.
As luck would have it, the owner happens to come in and they say, "Hey, can you tell us the average salary here?" And he says, "Well, no." He said, "I can tell you what the highest salary is and what the lowest is. And I can tell you also that none of you earn the same amount. Everyone's salary is different. But I can't tell you what the average salary is. You'll have to figure that out for yourselves." And he leaves with a plate of crab cakes. Now, the question is, how can these seven people figure out their average salary without divulging anyone's salary or even finding out what the high and low salaries are? And I think I may have hinted that the boss was a red herring, and he is. You don't have to know any of that stuff.
I wondered about that.
No.
Now that I hear you say it again, I said, what's the highest and the lowest got to do with
this? I had to unclarify.
Declarify.
And obfuscate.
Ah. Okay.
He came in because he was hungry.
Yeah.
Here's how you do it.
This is good.
The first guy takes his salary and to it adds some number that he plucks out of the air. Let's say his salary is $500 a week. He adds 8,000 to it. He turns to the guy next to him and whispers 8,500 in his ear. Mm-hmm. Now, that guy doesn't know anything. Mm-hmm. He doesn't know what part of that is his salary and what part of that is the made-up number. He then adds his salary to that 8,500 and whispers it to the guy next to him down the line. Finally, the seventh guy has this huge number, and he's obviously added his salary to it.
He gives it back to guy number
one.
He
gives it back to guy number one. Guy number one subtracts the 8,000 or whatever it is he added, divides by seven, and hence the average salary. And nobody knows nothing, and nobody gets hoit. Do we have a winner?
You bet we do. The winner is Alan Womack from, Coushatta? Coushatta. Sounds like something you shouldn't say on the radio.
No, no.
Don't step into Coushatta. From Coushatta, Louisiana, and for having his correct answer selected at random. From all the correct answers that we got, Alan is going to get a $26 gift certificate to the Shameless Commerce Division at CarTalk.com, with which he can purchase anything, or at least any cheap thing, from the CarTalk line of fine apparel and audio products.
Anyway, we'll have a new historic folkloric.
Write this down. Historic, folkloric.
Automotive.
Automotive.
Mathematical.
Oh, man.
Puzzler coming up over the next several weeks. Today, I don't know. Coming up in the third half of today's show. So don't touch that dial. In the meantime, we'll take your calls at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Matt from Russell, New York.
Hey, Matt. Russell?
Russell.
Where's that?
You know where Potsdam is?
No.
He's in Germany.
Oh, it's sort of like in the middle of the state, way up there.
Well,
out west.
Not really the middle. It's really far north.
Oh, Camp Drum.
Yeah, yeah. A little bit east of there.
East of there. I got it. Like okay.
Vermont.
Potsdam.
I know exactly where you are. Yeah.
Okay, we got you triangulated. So what's up, Matt?
Okay, I have an 87 VW Vanagon.
Yeah.
And it has no rust on it except the muffler. And it has 184,000 miles on it.
Wow.
Ogden Nash should write a poem. What a wonderful vehicle, the Vanagon. It's not another than the Senna can.
We
can,
right? I'll work on it.
All right.
Well, anyways, this winter is the first time I've had it in the wintertime, and it gets really cold up here. And I started noticing the other day that when I start it up and it's cold, it leaks a lot of antifreeze. Like drip, 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 drip.
From where? I mean, all the tailpipe?
No, from all four corners of the... from the head gasket.
Oh.
What?
Bummer.
Yeah. But as the car warms up, it stops leaking the antifreeze.
Yeah.
It just stops.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to a friend of mine that does a lot of work on cars about using his heated garage to change the head gasket, and he said he'd help out.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to a local VW mechanic, and he said it's way too much work, and he wouldn't bother doing it unless I was going to get a new short block because... in order to make it worthwhile, you'd have to put about $3,000 into it, he said, because once you get it apart, you're going to find everything needs to be rebuilt. And
well, he might be right. First of all, I find it curious that it's leaking from all four corners.
Yeah.
And I would suspect that the head is loose.
That's what somebody else said, and they said I should tighten it.
My brother says that to me all the time. He said, you have a screw loose up there someplace. And, I mean, I would, just for the heck of it.
Okay.
I would get myself a torque wrench. You can borrow that from your friend who does all this mm-hmm. work. And I would go around and torque every one of those head bolts.
Okay.
And if that doesn't work, I would forget about it. I would just keep driving it, because it's probably not leaking much. I mean, if it stops leaking as soon as the engine warms up, as long as you keep...
Well, you know how much it's leaking. How often do you add coolant?
Every couple days.
Yeah.
Oh, every couple of days.
But, I mean,
but how much do you add? Like a quart?
At most.
At most. You could go on for decades like this.
Well, it depends on what you want to do with it. If you're willing to accept that you're only going to drive this thing within a 50-mile radius of Russell, then you could go on for a long time. If you ever expect to leave that godforsaken place and move back to civilization, you'll have to fix it because you could never... Or get there some other way, because you know that if you drove this thing for 4 hours on the highway, it would blow the head gasket out completely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because every time the head gasket leaks and then closes up again and then leaks and closes up, the gasket gets weaker and weaker.
Okay.
And you're just encouraging the thing to blow. And the fact that it's leaking from all four corners means... It's going to go, man. It's going to go.
Yeah, but see, the clue that Matt gave us is when he described the vehicle, he said, no rust, meaning that there's some kind of emotional attachment that he has to this vehicle, as well as the purely mechanical part of it. Am I right on this?
Oh, yeah.
So you want this baby to go on forever.
Yeah.
If it really is such a wonderful vehicle, then I would wait until, if you don't have to drive it far, wait until the obvious happens,
mm-hmm.
which is the head gasket blows, and then rebuild the entire engine.
Yeah, because with 184K on it, the guy who told you that all those other things are going to be wrong, he was correct.
Oh, yeah, if you rebuild the head and put a new gasket on, it's going to start burning oil like crazy. You're going to blow the bottom end out. You might as well save your money for the big one.
Torque down all the head bolts. Make sure you do it in the right order. And my guess is that it's going to stop leaking.
I would just torque the corner ones.
Yeah, you can start with that. But if the corner ones are loose, they may all be loose.
One curious thing about the idea of them being loose, it's a flat four, so there's two heads, one on either side.
And both heads are leaking?
Yeah. One is leaking more than the other, but they both are leaking.
Yeah, and that's why I think that the bolts are loose.
Okay.
Yeah.
Give it a shot.
I'll give it a shot.
We'll call you on Stump the Chumps and see if we're right.
No, I think you...
at least we'll pray for you.
We'll say
Won't
a prayer.
That be enough?
Sounds good, thanks. Oh,
see you, Matt.
Thank you, Matt.
Yep, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, I have some mail here, actually.
Go for it, baby.
Okay, the mail I have here is in the form of a little quiz.
Really?
Yeah. This is signs that you would see in various places, and I'm going to give you the sign.
Me?
And you tell
I'm going to get the sign?
Yep. No, I'll give you what it says on the door, and you tell me what it's the door to. You ready?
Cool.
It says, if you don't see what you're looking for, you've come to the right place.
Auto parts store.
No, optometrist office. All right.
Okay.
How about, it's the door says, push, push, push.
Push, push, push. Obstetrics.
Maternity room. How about this? dog food is expensive. Salesman welcome.
Dog food is expensive. I don't know. I give up.
the fence to Doug's backyard where he's got six pounds. Actually, this is a real sign that someone saw in Urbana, Illinois. No parking on the side of village streets with even addresses on odd-numbered days or odd-numbered addresses on even-numbered days, except as otherwise designated. A day begins at 6 p.m. the preceding day. Urbana, Illinois.
Beautiful.
A day begins at 6 p.m. the preceding day. Wow. That's great.
I remember when we first went into business, there was a gas station around the corner from us, and we used to bring, we didn't have a brake lathe, so we used to bring our drums there to get machined.
Right.
This was the days before there were disc brakes.
What are those guys'
names? The Latorella brothers.
Latorellas, yeah.
And they had a sign that said...
They had an ugly dog.
That said, a dangerous attack dog on premises. Survivors will be prosecuted. no trespassing.
Right.
Dangerous attack dog on premises.
Survivors will
Survivors
be prosecuted.
Will be prosecuted.
And he was mean.
Oh, yeah, the dog was too. Remember, my brother has nothing to do all day, so he'd love to read your mail.
Yeah.
So if you have something to say or something to pass along or anything about which he can rant and rave.
Yeah, especially that.
Especially that. Send it to him at Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Power Fair City.
Ma 02238. Or if you can't get to the postage meter because someone else in the office is hoarding it, you can always email us at cartalk.com. Now, if you'd rather use the phone and insult us personally, our number is 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Elizabeth. I'm calling from Palo Colorado Canyon in California.
Palo, Colorado?
It's near Big Sur.
Ah.
And the first thing I have to tell you is I love my truck.
Good.
Okay.
I'm happy for you.
Okay. It's a 77 Dodge Power Wagon.
What's not to love?
Wow.
Yeah. It's a great truck.
Sure.
But it has been stuck on a hill for so long that my neighbors decorated it with Christmas lights.
Oh, that bad, huh?
Yeah.
When was the last time this thing ran?
Several months ago. Hmm. And what happened is that it had a weak battery for a really long time, and we often had to jump it. And the day that it just wouldn't start anymore,
mm-hmm.
that's when my scientist pseudo-spouse decided to pour gasoline into the gas tank and the carburetor and lit the truck on fire.
I shouldn't laugh.
No.
But, I mean, he how did he do that?
No, I know what he did. There was no gas in the tank, and he said, I'm going to fill up the tank with some of the gas from this can. The rest of the gas I'm going to use to prime the carburetor.
Yeah.
So he poured some liquid gas, knowing that when you crank the thing over, it would suck in that gasoline. Even though the mixture was way too rich, it would be enough to fire it up, get the fuel pump cranking very fast, get the pump to pump the gas from the tank to the carburetor, at which point the car would run by itself.
Yeah, but so why did he set it on fire? We do that every day.
That's the question.
But the key is that it was running while it was on fire.
Yes.
Yeah.
But then it
he must have spilled it all over
the
place.
Again.
He must have spilled a lot of it.
No, what happened was the choke wasn't working correctly. It backfired through the carburetor and ignited that gas in the intake manifold.
Yeah, but that should have gone right out.
Depends on how much you've spilled.
So I mean, how long did the fire last? Seconds, right?
Let's see. Just maybe a half a minute.
Sure. Seconds. Just long enough to melt the carburetor.
No, it didn't melt anything.
Yeah, I don't think this had anything to do with it not starting subsequent to this little incident. We'll call it an incident.
Mm-hmm. Well, what he thinks it is he thinks that it was out of gas because the gas gauge doesn't work, and that it was a fuel pump battery interaction effect, and that the battery was too weak for the fuel pump to get gas to the carburetor.
Yeah.
Is he
a scientist?
Yes.
He thinks he's a scientist.
No, he is.
No, he is a scientist.
He is a scientist.
He's a real scientist.
And what does he science at?
He's a marine ecologist.
Oh, well.
Marine. Well, that's a scientist.
Yeah, exactly. It helps a lot when you need to work on cars.
Yeah, not exactly.
No, he
kind
knows
of science
he
involved
is,
here.
He has been trained in the scientific method.
Well,
as have we.
He wanted to do an ANOVA on the problem.
He did. I love it. ANOVA is analysis of variance to those people who don't do this every day.
So my question is, what do you guys think I should do?
So the thing catches fire.
Uh-huh.
Big deal. What now? I mean, why won't it start now?
He's afraid to duplicate it, and he has to not be afraid. That's number one. Number two, he has to get rid of you.
Yeah, you gotta go away.
You can't be around.
Because you'll just keep telling him, don't do that, hon.
If the thing indeed ran out of gasoline, then in fact, if the battery were weak and you were using another battery to jump it with, you would not have sufficient cranking speed to get the fuel pump to suck the gasoline from the tank and fill up the carburetor. So I think he's absolutely correct. And the way he's going to get the thing to run
is to judiciously
pour a smaller amount of gasoline into the carburetor.
He may have gone a little overboard with that one.
Did he pour it from the jug or did he put it in a cup first?
The whole jug.
Yeah.
Yeah. He needs to transfer it into a non-styrofoam cup and then pour a few ounces into the carburetor.
Yeah. That's all it takes. I mean, it just takes a smidge.
Okay.
And I, like I said, I don't think you should be around when he does this. Except
well,
maybe...
she's got to be around to turn the key while he's pouring the gasoline.
No. No, if anything, you want to be around holding the handle of the fire extinguisher. So he's going to pour the gas in, then he's going to get back. He's not going to pour gas while anyone's cranking it. That's a good way to burn your eyebrows off. I know. I've done it.
Yeah. But, I mean, I don't think there's any real problem here. It's going to start right up.
Thanks very much for your help, guys.
Get a fire extinguisher and stand by.
Okay, I'll try that.
Wear goggles.
Thanks again.
See you, Elizabeth.
Bye-bye.
All right, look, it's time to take a short break.
Yeah, and when we come back, my brother will either read from the Talmud or present this week's puzzler.
My choice, huh? Okay, we'll be back in a minute.
And even though St. Jude, the patron saint of lost causes, applies for a reassignment, whenever we say it, this is NPR.
Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to discuss cars, car repair, and of course the new Puzzler.
Advertised as historic, folkloric, automotive, and something else which I don't remember.
And you never heard of false advertising, son? Picture this.
I will.
It's 1936. Europe is on the brink of yet another war. In a secret location in Germany, German officers are gathered around the table with the designers and the builders of its new personnel carrier. They're going over every little detail, leaving no stone unturned. They want everything to be flawless.
Das Jeep.
Das Jeep, yeah. One of the officers stands up and he says, I have a question about the fan belt. You see, this fan belt, it looks just like the belt that you wear around your waist. It's a flat piece of rubber, and it's designed to run the fan and the generator. And he asks, how long do you expect this belt to last? And the engineer says, 30 to 40,000 kilometers, Colonel.
Oh.
He says, not good enough.
Of course not.
He said, we need it to last 60,000 kilometers. The fellow says, well, he said, it's merely a simple matter of taking the belt off and turning it over. Because this is a flat belt. It's not a V-belt.
Yeah.
You turn it inside out and you put it back on. He says, that's unacceptable. That won't do. He said, we can't. He said, our soldiers will be engaged in battle. We can't ask them to be changing fan belts.
Well,
in the middle of the battle,
he's got a point.
In the middle of the battlefield.
Yeah.
So all the engineers huddle together, and they come up with a clever design. What do they come up with?
They come up with a way to extend the life of the belt.
They come up with a clever way to extend the life of the belt.
To 60,000 kilometers. Yeah, they make it out of Kevlar.
They don't have Kevlar. Hadn't been invented yet.
Nylon stockings.
There you go. But they don't. They do not change the material of the belt.
Ah, that's what I was getting at.
Okay,
they do not, but they come up with a clever design.
They come up with a clever design, and in 2 minutes, they have a solution to the problem which satisfies the general.
Wow.
He wasn't a general at the beginning of the meeting. He was only a colonel.
He was a colonel.
But the meeting lasted so long that he became a general by the end.
Yeah.
So if you think you know the answer, write it on the back of a tournament-quality bocce set, complete with 8 resin balls, 1 Palino ball, rugged storage bag, official game rules, and a flat, manicured, 4-acre grass plot in Boca Raton.
Why not?
And send it to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Matt 02238.
Or you can email us your answer from cartalk.com.
But right now, if you have a car question that can't wait, give us a buzz. The number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Sunday from Long Beach Island, New Jersey.
Sunday.
Yeah.
Wow.
How are you, Sunday?
I'm good, thanks.
How are you on Monday?
Oh, that's an old joke.
So what's
sure.
up?
Okay, I have a 1990 Toyota Corolla.
Yeah.
And I have a problem starting it. The first problem is that maybe it's the ignition, maybe it's the key, but it doesn't turn.
You mean when you turn the key turns?
The key doesn't turn.
Doesn't.
Oh, the key doesn't turn at all.
Right.
Oh, okay.
And what do you do to get it to turn? You just...
Just keep trying.
Do you say it? Do you say anything? Soothing words?
Yeah, I talk nicely, too.
How long does it take before the soothing words yield to more...
Like 5 minutes.
Abusive terms.
And it always eventually turns.
It does.
And okay, is so that because you get more aggressive with the key or more creative? I mean, give us the whole, give us a typical 5 minute little.
Well, it's been going on for quite a while now, so I kind of just sit there in resignation and keep trying.
You're a very calm.
So you try it, you release it, you try it.
Yeah.
You release it. And then when it finally.
And you haven't broken off a key in that thing yet?
No.
Yeah, I think I would have broken
my
off.
My brother would have broken off
the first day.
With a couple of you no good run.
Yeah, when you try to start it and it doesn't work, do you do anything with the steering wheel, for example?
Yes, I do all those
things.
It could be just the key. I buy cheap keys. So
ah.
It could, So the second problem is that once it turns, all the accessories come on, but the car itself doesn't turn on. And that goes on for maybe 10 minutes. And then it eventually always starts.
Well, then it's time to go home from work.
And the problem gets less bad throughout the day as I'm driving it more and more. And it's worse when the car's not been driven in a while.
So you have two problems.
Yeah.
You have one problem in that you can't turn the key, period.
Yeah.
Right.
And then once you do turn the key, the thing won't start because you probably need a new starter motor. And occasionally it will start, and probably more often than not it will start,
mm-hmm.
I would imagine. And that's pretty characteristic of these old Corollas, that they have a bad spot on the starter.
Mm-hmm.
And if you hit it, you can try it 1,000 times and it won't start, and then finally it'll just work.
Mm.
So you need to replace the starter motor.
Okay.
But you also need to replace... I believe the ignition lock. Is it, have any of the keys made a difference when you've had a new key made? Is it? Can you say, oh, this one's worse?
It doesn't matter.
Do you have the original key?
No.
Ah. Well, when you have the lock replaced, you'll get a couple of new keys with it.
Mm.
Yeah, put one in your safe deposit box.
Yeah.
You might need it. Yeah. I mean, if a key turns the lock, then it's okay. You know, but if it doesn't turn the lock, then you don't know whether to suspect the key or the lock.
Right.
But it wouldn't be a bad idea to go to the Toyota dealer and ask them to cut you a key.
Uh-huh.
You know, and not make one from one of your, perhaps, duplicates.
Yeah.
And that's still not going to mean that you don't need the starter motor. I mean, the starter motor is another issue. So you might need two things, but you don't have to spend hundreds to fix this.
I know. See, I rarely drive this car. I only drive it on the
weekend. Well, we understand why you're really driving. It won't start.
So first get the real key made.
Yeah.
If that doesn't work, get the lock replaced.
Uh-huh. Here's an idea.
Okay.
This is a 1990 and not likely to be stolen.
No.
If you didn't turn the key all the way off, the car would...
But then the lights would be on.
I don't think so. Maybe
it does have a position on the ignition. I could turn it not,
Yeah.
I could leave the key in,
just
but not
leave the key in. Everything would be off. It wouldn't kill the battery, but it wouldn't be in the lock position. That is the position where you can take the key out.
Mm-hmm.
You'd still have the starter motor problem, but your frustration level would go way down, and you wouldn't feel like killing somebody when you got to work.
She doesn't. She's a female. Females don't have the same relationship to their cars as males. You, as you said, you would have broken the key off the first day.
Because I...
Not only the key, you'd have broken the steering wheel.
No, because I would have known what needed to be replaced, and that was a preemptive step. Why not break the key off? I'm going to get a new one anyway.
No good.
Well,
the names you would call the lock would be unprintable.
Well, it depends on how late you are for something. I mean, that determines your level of frustration. If you feel...
Well, I just expect it now.
So you drive the car only on weekends?
Yeah, I live in New York, but I leave the car with my boyfriend on the weekend.
Uh-huh.
During the week and so.
Does he drive it during the week?
No. Maybe if he did, it would get better.
I think you should suggest to him that he start driving it.
Yeah.
Let him
break everything.
Maybe he'll break the key off.
He'll have to...
Right. Oh, yeah, let him break the key off and he'll feel bad and he'll fix it.
Okay.
Good strategy. See you Sunday.
All right, thanks.
Nice talking to you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
888 Car Talk. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Rachel from Moorpark, California.
Hi, Rachel.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
What's up?
Well, I have a 94 Chrysler Concorde. It's a big car.
Yeah.
When I'm on an incline on the road or a decline, mostly I feel it, but when there's a turn in the road, my car shudders back and forth. It doesn't go up and down. It's like boom, 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 going back and forth.
So you're going down an incline.
Uh-huh.
Or up.
Yeah, if I'm going like at a slight right or a slight left.
Ah.
So if I punch it, I won't feel it. Or if I brake, I won't feel it. But if I'm just coasting,
and if
going kind of on a curve in the road.
Right. And if you're driving at 70, you don't feel it.
Right.
No, really.
Yeah, really.
Or anything between, say, 5 and 70.
Exactly.
So is 5 miles an hour the speed at which you stop feeling it?
Maybe a little bit more. Maybe like 15.
So until you get to 15, you feel this kind of a tugging on the wheel?
Yeah, and it's like a shuddering back and forth.
Like a shuddering, but you can actually, if you were to drive down the road with your hand off the steering wheel at, say, 10 miles an hour, could you actually see the steering wheel moving? Like, doop,
uh-huh.
Doop, doop. Yeah, you could?
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
That's bad.
First of all, I should say that if anyone ever has this kind of a symptom, it's very, potentially very, very dangerous.
Yeah, we think you have tread separation on one of your front tires.
Okay.
And eventually that tire is going to fail, and the tread, who knows what could happen, but it could easily blow on you, you know. You could have a blowout.
Oh,
yeah.
And while it's not likely to happen tomorrow, it's likely to happen the day after.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, so you need to buy at least one new tire.
And
I mean, there are other possibilities. You could have a bad constant velocity joint. You could have unusual wear in a ball joint or a tie rod end, but it's almost, this is a classic tread separation thing where you can actually see the steering wheel kind of with every revolution of the tire.
Uh-huh.
So every one revolution of the of the bad tire will make the steering wheel deflect several degrees left or right.
Now, can you get to a tire store driving 15 miles an hour?
You know what? I have a spare. I could just change it out and then take it in.
You know, you think you know which tire is bad?
I think I know which tire it is.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Well, you put it on one place, and if that isn't it, you put it on the other side.
Exactly.
And if that doesn't fix it, then you have two bad tires.
Yay!
Put your spare on and make sure you get those lug nuts good and tight and drive it to the tire store and buy yourself maybe four new tires.
Oh, hurrah.
And you really got to do it soon because you could die.
Oh, yay.
And we've lost a lot of listeners this year. So.
Yeah, we can't afford to lose anymore. We're down to like six.
So get it taken care of, will you, Rachel?
All right, I will.
Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Wilbur. I'm your sixth listener from East Brunswick,
hey!
New Jersey.
Hi, Wilbur. Jeez, what took you so long?
East Brunswick where?
New Jersey.
Ah,
okay.
Yeah. What's up?
My wife and I park our cars outside because our garage is too small.
And you got too much junk in it, probably.
Yeah, that too.
The kayaks, the lawnmowers, the snow blowers.
Oh, yeah. But since it's wintertime here, there are many mornings where there's lots of frost on the windshield. And I've taken to just filling up a watering can with hot water from the tap and pouring it all over the windshields to get rid of the frost, which is actually something that I had suggested to my dad when I was little. And he told me, no, just scrape the stuff off because he was afraid the water would either crack the windshield or do something to the seal. And, of course, I'm getting my revenge now by doing what I want. However, whenever I go to do this, I still feel the presence of my dad looking over my shoulder and wondering if this is actually going to cause any problems.
Is your dad still with us, Wilbur?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's in Chicago.
He's in Chicago. And does he know you're calling us today?
He probably will be. But
So is there a chance he could be listening?
Maybe.
Well, you moron, you shouldn't be doing that.
No, I mean, he's right. That there's a very good chance that if the water is a little bit too hot or the weather is too cold, you could crack the windshield.
Okay. What if it's, like, you know, warm to the touch, you know, but you know, it's not boiling water or anything like
that? Oh, it's not.
No, if it's tepid water.
Try boiling water.
Boiling water could certainly do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could certainly do it, especially if it applied to one area, but that's what they have insurance for. You don't have to tell them how it happened necessarily. But you know, tepid water probably isn't going to do anything. But any water that's applied to your windshield is eventually, if it's cold enough, going to refreeze.
Exactly.
But the same thing would happen, for example, if you sprayed that windshield with that de-icer stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it would, eventually this stuff would refreeze or when it rains, like freezing rain. So it's not like it's going to clog anything up or hurt anything.
Yeah, I actually haven't had that much problem with it refreezing on the days that I've tried this.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, so you've been a practitioner of this insanity for how long now?
As soon as he moved out of his father's house.
But all this time you've been worried. It's been years, though, right?
Oh, no, I actually just been doing it this winter.
Ah. Oh, just this winter.
I mean, if it were 0 degrees out and you put tepid water on there, it would freeze right away.
It might freeze right away, but it wouldn't crack your windshield.
Yeah, but you know, I've also noticed that I only really have the big frost problem when the temperature is just around freezing. If it's actually you know, much colder, I don't have a frost problem.
Yeah. Right, because the frost occurs when dew settles on your, you know, moisture comes out of the air and then freezes on your cold windshield.
Yeah, and the other thing is that, you know, we just bought our house last year, and before I was living in an apartment, so I would have had to cart the water like 17 floors to get down to my car, which was not going to be worthwhile.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, now that you have a house of your own,
mm-hmm.
you can, you must have a, you have a basement in this home?
Yeah.
And you must have a laundry room of some kind.
Yeah.
With probably a, an accompanying sink next to it, you know, like a, what do they call it, a soak sink or a slop sink or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you have a faucet which has running hot and cold water.
Ah!
You could hook up a length of hose, 500 feet if necessary.
to run the warm water.
To run warm water out to your car so you can hose the whole car off.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you can ice up the whole neighborhood, man. You leave a skating rink behind, but what? You'll be at work. Not to worry. But I wouldn't worry. You can do it. Just don't put boiling hot water on the thing, because you could also burn yourself.
Yeah.
All right, but tell Dad not to worry. You're in good hands with us, Wilbur.
Okay.
See you later, man.
All right, thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yes, bye-bye.
Well, it's happened again. You've wasted another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk.
I certainly have.
Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are David the Cavs of Belleville Green, Carly High Voltage Nix, and Catherine Flau Blucher Fenolosa. Our web blackie is Doug the Old Gray Mare, assisted by Connie Britchford. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. Our interns are Ariel Niedermeyer and Kira McKnight. And our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Vladivostok vegan vichyssoise and vinaigrette victory vamp, is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Marjan Overa. Our customer care representative is Haywood Jabuzoff. Our long-distance truck driver is Etienne Wheeler. Our director of top secret strategy is Donatello Nobody. And our solicitor of new ideas is Obi Quiet. Our sexual harassment investigator is Hank Pankey. Our meteorologist from the New Delhi office is Luke Outavindo. Our eBay specialist is Selma Junkoff. Our construction manager is Dustin Dubry. Dustin Dubry, you get it? Our Russian chauffeur is Pikoff and Dropoff. And our seat cushion tester is Mike Easter. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe, as always, is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the shivering professors in Spring Tweed in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. And above all, don't drive like my brother.
And below all, don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 1205, download classic Car Talk episodes, or check out our clothing and CD collections all over at cartalk.com.
Also this week at cartalk.com, what's the best way to keep up on car industry news?
Well, with Car Talk's daily Twitter feed, you get the top automotive headlines of the day and our instant analysis.
For instance?
Well, Hyundai ranked tops in customer retention due to excellent warranty and trap doors in the showrooms.
Yeah.
You can find our latest tweets on the cartalk.com homepage, or you can follow Car Talk on Twitter.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though Bondo, the human cannonball, curses the accurate placement of his catch net whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR.